Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings, and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. And also, happy Groundhog's Day. It's a really exciting day for me because we don't have that many animal holidays in the U.S., so we're celebrating hard even though we saw a stupid shadow. Well, sadly, I couldn't find a groundhog expert, so we're going to talk about something even cooler, Apopo's Hero Rats. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and I've got Charlie Richter with me today. He's the U.S. Director of Apopo. They train rats to save lives. We're going to discuss what's been happening with them since our last interview over a year ago. I'm really thrilled to have him back. Hey, Charlie, are you there?
I am there. Hi, Celia. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, thanks for coming back on. As you know, I'm a huge fan of your organization, so I'm thrilled to have you back. Yay!
Oh, well, thank you so much. We're appreciative of all of our supporters, for sure.
How are you doing today? You okay?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm down in D.C., so it's been windy but warm. Are you guys recovering from the storm up there?
Oh, my God. We have so much ice and so much everything. It's nasty. I can't believe you didn't get hit. You're a lucky man.
I know. I agree. We haven't actually had it so bad this winter at all, so.
I'm moving to D.C. That's it.
We welcome you with open arms.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So let's get started. I mean, let's get started at the very beginning. In case people don't know what Apopo is, can you talk a little bit and explain what your organization does?
Sure, and I think it helps maybe to get a sense of the history of Apopo and our founder, Bart Wietjens, who's a Belgian guy who his whole life had been both a rodent lover. He actually trained rodents growing up, had a lot of pet rats, and sold them to pet stores. And was also someone who grew up close to Africa. He had spent some time living there, and was very, you know, had a strong emotional bond to helping the people there. And, you know, in 1996, actually, Bart sort of put together the plan, the idea that landmines were a huge problem in many of the countries in Africa he had visited. And one of the major problems was that they didn't have detection tools that were both locally affordable and locally maintainable.
Mm-hmm.
And he had thought back to how rats could be trained pretty much to locate and signify target scents, and thought, wow, you know, Africa has abundant supply of rats, lots of, you know, highly developed rat species, and then came up with the idea of training rats to do landmine detection. And, you know, ever since then, we've evolved into other areas like tuberculosis and continue to do research in other ways that we can train rats to essentially serve humanity and save lives. So right now we have a base in Tanzania where we do all of our research and training, and we're doing mine detection in Mozambique, Angola, Cambodia, and Vietnam, and do tuberculosis detection diagnosis work essentially in Mozambique and Tanzania. So
you guys have really spread, because last time we talked, you guys were just in Mozambique and Tanzania. So that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great. Wow. So how many Hero Rats do you guys have currently working?
So right now we have working in countries. We have 20 rats in Angola doing mine detection work. We have another 30 in Mozambique who have been doing work, and that's really where we've had the most success, and I'll talk a bit about that later. But we also have 16 waiting patiently in Tanzania to take off to Cambodia, and those are going to be the first hero rats we've actually sent out off the African continent to do work in Asia. So that's very exciting.
Wow.
We have 50, and then we have 50 being trained in our center, 50 being trained, so the training process is about 9 months. So they're being trained in our center in Morogoro. And then another 20 waiting to be accredited, meaning that they need to prove that they're perfect operators in mine action or, up to the standards in TB diagnostics before they start working.
Cool. And so for people that have never heard about you guys, just to let them know, how does a rat detect a landmine?
So it's, you know, it kind of starts with the whole training process, which is, you know, we do something called operant conditioning, where we will slowly teach a rat it only takes 9 months, essentially, but, you know, the end game is that they figure out that a click sound, that when they smell TV, they're supposed to scratch. When they smell TV, they're supposed to put their nose in a hole where the TV gets diagnosed, but when they smell landmines, it's probably easier example for people to grasp right now, they actually scratch at the ground, and then they hear a click, and they run back to the trainer and are fed a little bit of banana or peanut or something along that lines. And by that way, they are reinforced to constantly, whenever, you know, they are trained that when they smell TNT, they scratch at the ground and they're rewarded food. Now, that process takes a bit for them to learn, but again, that's how they really, you know, that's how they signify landmines. And with TB, it's they put their nose in the hole where they're smelling the TB diagnostic, and then, you know, they're trained to relate that smell to the food reward.
And so how old are they when you first start training them?
So they actually begin training at 5 weeks, or what we call socialization, and this is when the rat will begin letting it out of the cage. We'll get it used to different smells, to interacting with human beings, to different, walking surfaces, because in landmines they're doing more on the ground, and TB it's within, within a laboratory setting. So that slowly, you know, comes into the clicker training, where they actually start, you know, they'll be just, the rats will essentially be running around playing in a sense, and our trainers will start, doing click sounds. The rats will hear it, then they'll feed them. So they'll start associating click with food, and then eventually we will put them in training, in training boxes where we will have either TNT tea eggs, and so they will then start going over and they'll smell TNT. The trainer will click, the rat will come back, and so then they now associate not only the click sound with food, but the click sound, the TNT smell of food, and it works similarly with TNT. And so that process takes another 3 months, and then they actually start doing, you know, testing on both our simulated landmine field out in Tanzania, which is equipped with a lot of deactivated landmines and other things with TNT in it that the Tanzanian government actually provided us, or they start doing TNT training, and they have to go through a rigorous certification process before we actually let them do real detection work.
So they're pretty young then, once they've figured it all out and are off to go and save lives, huh?
Correct. Yeah, the average rat passes through the process in 9 months, and then ultimately they live on average for 7 years. So that's part of why our rats are such a cost-effective tool, because we only spend 9 months training them.
Yeah.
You know, then they're out and ready and can work for a while.
So are they treated more like pets or like working animals?
I mean, really, it's kind of, you know, we've set it up so that their work is really, you know, fun for them, because they are getting food rewards all the time.
Yeah.
And when they're not actually out there getting food rewards from our trainers doing their important detection work, they're playing in their cages, they're interacting with, the different trainers, they're meeting guests of a popo. We take animal welfare very seriously. Our trainers are really selected partially off their respect for animals.
Nice.
I would say, you know, they really are pets doing great tasks at the end of the day. And making the work really something they love to do is important to, our success.
Yeah, totally.
Saving lives.
Totally. I mean, I don't know what rats are like, but I know with other animals, if they don't want to do something, they're just not going to do it. It's very simple, you know.
Exactly,
so if they're not having fun, forget it. So what is their diet like? I mean, if you're giving them bananas and snacks and stuff, what do they get to eat when they're not working?
So our scientists and animal behavioral experts out in Tanzania really work out their diet very carefully. I mean, it's meant to be a very, you know, balanced with vitamins and fiber. They're checked by a vet every 2 weeks to make sure they're perfectly healthy. I mean, the rats are ultimately motivated by food, so they will eat anything, but we make sure that it's things that'll keep them healthy. I mean, one funny story, I began with the popo last December and went out there for my initiation, and the first time I was actually meeting and playing with the hero rat, I had just eaten a cookie and had some crumbs on my lips, so the rat actually gave me a big kiss right
Aww.
When I met it. So, if you actually go onto the website, popo.org, and look at my bio, it was sort of right as they were taking my photo with the rat, and it's looking right at me, and it's because I had a little bit of food there on my lip, but it was a gentle kiss. So, but ultimately, yes, they're fed. You know, it's a controlled diet. It's high in fiber, high in vitamins. It is a lot of peanuts, you know, grounded up peanuts and bananas, which are usually what we use during the actual training, but it's also, you know, contains vitamins that are recommended by veterinarians and everything like that.
They're eating better than most American pet rats, so.
I would definitely think so, yes.
Yeah, definitely. And then how long, when you get your trainers and you're training them, like how long does it take to train a trainer to be able to work with the rats successfully?
So it's not, you know, it's a pretty streamlined process at this point. And ultimately, one of the important things to know about a popo is we're very, you know, we stress sustainability in the local setting. And we realize that to be both cost-effective and to be able to, you know, hire employees that will stay, be motivated, dedicated, that we needed to create a training protocol that was, you know, basically easily learned by someone with a middle school degree, because in Tanzania and most of the African countries where we work with, there's not a whole lot of people that are university educated.
Yeah.
And if they are, they wouldn't necessarily, you know, probably stick around with a popo for a while doing this. So we've created a training protocol that lasts about 2 months, is more or less very, you know, very is simple if you follow the, you know, if you follow the rules and you love animals and you're into what we're doing, you should easily get through it.
Yeah.
And then you can actually go out and start doing, you know, real-time training and actually diagnostic work with the rat. So, it doesn't take very long. And we have relatively very low turnover with our local employees. I think partially because our training program is so good, but we do a good job, as I said, selecting people who like animals and really have a connection to our mission as well.
So. I think that's fantastic. I love the fact that you're using your local help and doing everything locally there because it makes more sense. You're creating an industry in Africa as well. And, you know, we all know they can definitely use more work down there. So I think
I think the latest stats I saw, 98% of our employees are host country nationals. You know,
that's great.
Yeah. Come from the countries we work in, so it's a very important part of our core values is helping helping generate local employment.
It's so important too because there's so many nonprofits that don't, and they'll go into areas, you know, and if you're working with the locals, then you learn so much more information about what's going on down there, even in terms of like weather patterns and, you know, whatever it may be. If you want to know about Africans, you need to or Africa, you need to talk to people that are Africans that have grown up there and lived there and have generations there so that they know it. You know, bringing someone new in and trying to get them to learn all that information in a short period of time is virtually impossible. So it's great for you guys.
Absolutely. No, absolutely correct.
And then does every rat have, like, an individual trainer that they stay with?
Well, that's actually one of the main benefits about rats, particularly in mine detection, compared to dogs. Rats are, yes, they're sociable, they're nice creatures, but they aren't bond-forming like dogs, so they can be transferred between trainers and not lose any productivity.
Cool.
Which is a real benefit in you know, doing actual mine detection work in the field, because as a dog, a dog needs to come in with a dedicated trainer.
Yeah.
If that trainer changes, you can lose productivity. It's much more expensive and complicated to even do the training with the dog. So, the short answer is no, there isn't specific trainers assigned to each rat, but every trainer sort of has their favorite rat that might sort of they just bond with naturally because of their personality and the playfulness level of the rat, et cetera. But, you know, we don't necessarily train a rat with, you know, employee X in Tanzania, and then send that employee with that rat to Mozambique, and he is always assigned to that rat because that just wouldn't be an effective way to operate in the field,
seriously.
Nor is it necessary to keep the rats productive.
That's so cool. I mean, you know, I mean, you guys know me. It's like, I just love what you do. And I just think it's so smart. And I love how much time and energy you guys have put into doing it right. And so it's always a pleasure to talk with you guys. And I always learn a ton. So we need to take a quick break, Charlie. So we are talking to Charlie Richter of Apopo. We're going to take a station identification, be back in about 2 minutes. So hang on.
I tripped. I was in the
You are listening to Lazy LA by Odetta Hartman.
Hello out there, it's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
And we are back. We are talking to Charlie Richter of Apopo. Charlie, I wanted to ask you, we've discussed how the landmine situation is kind of hard for Americans to grasp since we're fortunate to not have this problem in this country. Can you give an example of what it would be like to live in Mozambique or Tanzania before you guys got there?
Sure. Well, Celia, one thing I wanted to just make sure the audience knew, we don't actually do landmine detection work in Tanzania, and there's no landmines there. We have our training center there, mainly because we have developed amazing partnerships there that allow us to be very efficient. Mm-hmm. But no, there certainly is landmines in Mozambique. There's landmines in Angola, landmines in Cambodia, where we're all sending the rats. And I think what one really needs to realize about landmines is not only is it the possibility that you could get lethally injured by them, if you step on them, but it's just a fear that cripples your life every day. I mean, if you know that the field out beside you might have a landmine on it, or you suspect it may, you're not going to go use that for farmland if you're in a rural African setting, or your kids can't go there and play.
Yeah.
So it really constrains your day-to-day life in many ways, and leaves you in a constant state of fear. Which, of course, that just lowers everyone's quality of life overall. And, of course, in the really bad situations, people do get maimed. You know, you have a lot of people in high-burden mine countries that have prosthetics on, and then, you know, a lot of people who do die because of it. So, again, yeah, there's no multiple tragedies, both very much real death and then also just the fear it instills into people's lives on a daily basis.
Definitely. And like how bad is the landmine situation in the areas you're going to? I mean, are we talking like millions? I know you don't know. I know this is like, you know, fantasy question, but what do you think it's like? How bad do you think it is?
Well, I mean, you sort of have to realize that even one landmine in, you know, an area the size of the soccer field, over 30 landmines, essentially, usually what will happen in a community is they're going to know not to go there. There's probably a landmine over there. Let's stay away.
Wow.
But it creates the same sort of economic loss impact in that people don't want to go in that field. I mean, really how bad in terms of pure quantity of landmines really differs. And in a sense, when a place has a ton of landmines, it's actually easier to clear because you can sort of just clear all the land instead of having to search out exactly where all the landmines are.
Mm.
So it's kind of a hard sort of, I guess, thing to grasp. I mean, you look at the DMZ, that's nothing but landmines. But if they were going to all of a sudden demilitarize it, it'd be relatively simple to clear because they know where all the landmines are. They know they're very densely populated, so they could go in with big machines and get them out. But where our rats really, really thrive, too, is, you know, if there's three or four landmines, people don't really know where they are in, say, a field the size of a soccer field.
Yeah.
They can go in and they'll smell by the scent of TNT and locate them much quicker than human beings using metal detectors, because they won't pick up every single fragmented piece of metal. So, yeah, I mean, it isn't really. You got to think of it more as just one. You know, the threat of landmines is just as damaging as the actual quantity of mines in an area.
Definitely. And so, like, before you guys came along, there are people out there with metal detectors.
Well, I mean, it's the landmine clearance is still, even a popo. We use a 3-step process that includes rats, but also includes two other main steps. The first step is what we call non-technical survey, and a popo, besides rats, is also known as being an innovator in this field. And before, what happened is, say, a government or an international military organization would say, this whole state, for example, in this region is actually mine afflicted.
Mm-hmm.
And so organizations would go in, yes, with humans, with metal detectors, very slowly, going over every piece of the land. They would find mines, but a lot of what they would also find is just scrap metal that didn't have any TNT inside of it.
Mm.
So they'd be wasting constant time digging up stuff that really had no threat to the population. But what a popo does is, we actually go in and first we do non-technical surveys, which means we literally will go into a village and ask people, hey, do you go and use that land? I mean, do you graze your cattle on that? And how long have you grazed your cattle on it? And if we know they've been grazing cattle on it the whole, you know, all the time after a conflict has left the region,
mm-hmm.
we can say with complete certainty that there's no landmines on that field, and we'll release that. We won't use our precious resources trying to find the landmines there. But when we do this non-technical survey and we recognize a part of land or a portion of land that might have landmines, that's where the rats come in, because they will then, through a systematic grid process, we will have the rats go through and sniff for TNT, and then when they do indicate a landmine, which the rats are always too light to set off the landmines, in case anyone is listening to that, we'll then go in and carefully mark the spot the rat indicated and go in with more, with advanced technology that mm-hmm. helps you dig up and explode landmines completely, so no humans or rats or anyone in the community is injured.
Wow. And how accurate are the rats?
So for landmines, they are completely 100% accurate, and that's because they're sniffing out TNT, so the scent detection is very, very, very known
mm-hmm.
and very controlled. With tuberculosis, it's a little bit lower. It's 87%,
mm-hmm.
and that's because, these clinics or these samples are coming from clinics. They're associated with a variety of different smells. We don't actually know what the rats are smelling inside the tuberculosis that's making them indicate them. We just know because we cross-reference them
mm-hmm.
against known positives. So we'll test the rats on things we know are positive and know are negative,
uh-huh.
as well as with samples that we don't know are not positive and negative, that they get around 87%. And one thing we're actually researching and trying to do is to figure out the exact scent the rats are smelling within mm-hmm. tuberculosis, because that would improve our training and ultimately hopefully allow us to get up to that 100% accuracy level we have with landmines, because we know the exact scent to train them on.
I'm blown away that you're at 100% with landmines. That's amazing.
It is. Yeah, no, it's they really are amazingly effective tools when applied correctly.
And so what's going on with the hero rats? How are they doing these days?
I mean, the impact speaks for itself. We've cleared 17 million square meters of land.
Wow.
Essentially freeing the threat of landmines or other explosives from almost a million people, which, as I said, that's kind of one of the main things, really, is people can go back, use that land, use it for agriculture, grazing, et cetera, and you just see an immediate economic boost in a community once, you know, they're free of the landmine threat.
Wow.
In terms of TB, how we work is we take samples from, you know, we take samples from the National Tuberculosis Clinics in Dar es Salaam and Maputo, Mozambique,
mm-hmm.
and they've already been screened by microscopy or microscope in the local and local clinics there. And basically, this method they use, they don't have the resources. It's a very time intensive, sort of refined process, and they don't have either the human resources or, you know, the resources to keep up their equipment to do it all that well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're only getting about 40% of the actual TB patients that come into the clinics and complain of symptoms, and they send home essentially 60% of those people to go out and you know, they remain active with TB and can spread
wow.
the disease to their communities. Apopo then, with the rat system, because rats screen just way faster than they can in the clinics. For example, in 20 minutes, a rat can essentially, our rat screening process can do what a lab technician could do in 2 days.
Wow.
So we're 24 times faster approximately than lab technicians. And so we take those samples that they've already screened, many of which have been missed
mm-hmm.
by the clinics, and re-diagnose or you know, re-diagnose them, and we find an additional 40 to 50% of patients. And we then work with a local organization called Makuta in Tanzania and Mozambique that then go and track the patients and get them on medicine.
Wow.
So we've detected an additional 7,000 TB cases in both Tanzania and Maputo, and done it pretty relatively cheaply, to be honest. And we get about, we track down about 5,000 of those people, put them on medicine, and they're cured.
Wow.
And it's important to note that when a TB person remains active with their symptoms in the community, it's estimated they spread it up to 10 to 15 additional members of their community. So, you know, we stop the spread essentially too by finding more patients.
It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So what have you learned by working with rats?
I mean, I think in a more macro level, you know, Apopo is a great lesson on how we look at, you know, places like Tanzania and think they need our technology, they need our expertise to develop and to solve their own problems. But in reality, we took this locally available resource, rats, and turned them into this great effective tool for the community. And I think Apopo is a great lesson in how people need to think, you know, from the grassroots up in these areas to really figure out local solutions,
mm-hmm.
refine them, and then scale them out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, also that I think the overall lesson that things that human beings are naturally think just to be pests or, you know, deterrents to our lives can actually be great assets when deployed correctly.
Definitely. Definitely. And I mean, I have to admit that before I started talking to you guys, not the biggest rat fan, I have to admit. I'm really not. I used to work with horses, and there are a lot of rats when you work with horses, and I've got a couple nightmare stories. And so to hear that something that's really considered, you know, vermin or something really bad, to be able to come back and do good because they're being used the correct way and being utilized for what their skills are is just amazing. And I agree with you. It is a good lesson, and it's good. You know, it's a way to keep your eyes open and understand that, you know, there are other methods that might be easier or might seem completely crazy when you first start. I mean, I can't imagine what your director, like when he first started this, like what the reactions were from people. You know, I can't imagine that everyone would have been like, oh, my God, you're a genius. It'd be like, wait, you're training rats?
Yeah, no, we still get some folks who are, you know, hesitant at first when we talk about, hey, we use rats. But then when we show the impact numbers and our cost effectiveness, they usually come around quickly. But yeah, our founder, I mean, he began this adventure in 1996, and we didn't start doing TB detection work until almost a decade later. So he just kept at it and at it and at it, did experiments, did testing, you know, set up the virtual minefield in Tanzania. And now, I mean, yeah, as I said, the results speak for themselves. But you know, it is a lesson to other social entrepreneurs trying to do crazy things with resources that other people might not, or with a program that people might not think makes sense, to just keep at it, because eventually, if you are impactful, you know, you will succeed.
Totally.
Or if you can prove impactful potential, you will succeed.
So what are the future goals for Opopo?
I mean, we want to continue doing our mine action work, of course, across the world. I mean, the mine problem in general had started to decrease for a while, and unfortunately, you know, with the ISIS situation and a lot of civil wars going on in the Middle East, there is more landmines being deployed and laid down. So the problem is actually picking up again a bit. But, you know, we want to keep it become an active role, really get it so our RAT technology is fully utilized in any area that it can. Because when the RATs are utilized correctly, we do speed up efforts incredibly. In Mozambique, we became the preferred partner of the national government there just because not only for that non-technical survey process we do that helps our efficiency, but also because the RATs gave us an advantage over all of what are actually much larger mine operators in the country.
Wow.
So we want to become the trusted, you know, mine action partner of more governments around the world so we can really leverage our impact. We want to continue our TB work.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're working with 23 clinics in Dar es Salaam. We'd like to extend to work with more of those clinics. We're working with, I think, 13 clinics in Maputo. We'd like to extend to work with all the clinics there. And then eventually, we'd like to extend to more mega African cities and replicate the same program. Because really, this whole problem of under-resourced, underperforming TB diagnostic labs is really a global problem in both Sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, particularly in mega cities. And since we've developed this efficient system, we'd like to scale that. And then we're also looking to actually, you know, get into new ways that our RATs can be deployed to save human lives. Last year we did a project with that was funded by the U.S. Department of Defense, where we proved that our RATs could be deployed in building wreckages like the Haitian earthquake or you know, the Bangladeshi garment factories, and actually get into much smaller spaces than search and rescue dogs
Totally.
And locate bodies and save them. Another thing we're looking to do is begin a major research project into cancer detection. A lot of the listeners here, since they're animal lovers, probably have heard about dogs doing cancer detection.
Yeah.
And since our rats have just as good a sense of smell and are actually smaller, easier to train, easier to maintain, we think they would make a lot more sense as a cancer detection, animal cancer detection tool. So that's one thing we would love to get into as well. So that's sort of the future goals for Opopo.
I love it. It's like rats are going to save the world. Like,
exactly,
who knew?
Exactly.
So how can our listeners help? How can they find out more about you? I know you guys you're everywhere. You're on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. You've got your website, blah, blah, blah.
Sure. I mean, really the easiest way is to go to opopo.org. You know, if you'd like to, you can find out more there. You can link to all our social networks. We have an Adopt a Virtual Rat program where you get to name your own rat, and then you have a bit of a gamification where you can pick where your rat goes, what if it's doing TB or mind detection, learn about a lot about both areas and really feel connected to the issues Opopo's trying to resolve, and then also connected to sort of the day in the life of the rat. Since most of the viewers, of course, most of your listeners are animal lovers. And if anyone, you know, happens to work for an organization that might be interested in collaborating with Opopo, doing, you know, research around how we can make our operations better, I'd love them to reach out directly to me at charlie.richter@opopo.org. And you can find me in easily on the Opopo website as well.
Cool.
So, yeah, those are the easiest way to support us. Of course, tell our amazing and sort of an awe-inspiring story to any friends that you think would be interested. I mean, nothing is better marketing for us than having you know, animal lovers tell their friends about the amazing work we do.
Totally. And ladies, Valentine's Day is coming up, and if you've got a guy that has everything, you can adopt a rat for him, and it's pretty cool. It beats a tie, so you might want to think about that, because if you're with your donation, you're going to be helping save a lot of people's lives and changing the quality of life for a substantial amount of human beings.
Yeah, and we're actually launching a video very soon about, you know, a Valentine's Day gift promotional video, so look out for that online. But you know, a popo does make excellent, special gifts to loved ones. Actually, in 2009, Nicholas Kristof wrote about us and really helped boost our adoptions, but talked about how what a great alternative gift a popo made, and mm-hmm. and how interesting our adoption program is. So,
and what I love about it too is that you guys, the cost of all your stuff is really pretty modest, and so the fact is adopting a rat isn't that much money, and all the money is going back to Africa, and it's going back to training, and it's going back to taking care of the rats. This isn't an organization where everybody's making seven figures and it's trickling down lightly. This is really, like, these guys are trying to change the world. And so the more that we can help them by talking about it, getting someone a hero rat, getting yourself a hero rat, and just bringing more awareness out there is only going to make this stronger. And by making this stronger, we're making the planet a safer place.
Correct, correct. And the more people that endorse us and donate to us, the people that still might be, and the larger funders who might be scared about supporting rats will come around.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all part of again, the impact numbers speak for themselves, but as you said, you do need to convince people that rats are great, and one huge part of that is just by having a large network of supporters across the country and globally as well.
You know, it's funny because when I did you guys for the first time, which was, I think, episode 13, I was telling some friends of mine about the organization when we first connected and we got this gig, and I was so excited about it. And their first reaction was like, rats, oh God, no, really? And it's like, no, wait, you got to hear this. And it's like, no, they train the rats to do all this stuff. And then everyone just turned around and was like, wait, really? And it was like, what do they look like? And I'm like, well, they're really, really big. And it's like, oh, God, oh, no. And it's like, no, you don't get it. They're really big, but they're small, so they can do stuff, and it's easy, and they're quick. And, they're larger, so they can find them, and it's a natural breed. And they're not hybridizing these animals. This is what exists in Africa. And everybody turned around. I had one person who was like, I don't care, they're rats, they freak me out, which I get. But, the fact of the matter is once you hear what they're doing, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, and of course a lot of the rat problems here are just because they're in the sewers or in the gutters or living in dirty situations. But rats are actually incredibly intelligent animals.
Yeah.
And so that's an important thing to keep in mind. And they're very trainable and moldable. So.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. Charlie, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You guys know I love you guys, and I love being able to let everybody know what you guys have been up to. Good luck with everything. I'm so excited for you guys. You can, like I said before, you can find a popo on Facebook. You can find them on YouTube. You can find them on Twitter. Check out their website. Take a look around. The videos are awesome. So if you're bored and you want to see some rats in action, do check those out because they're absolutely worth doing. I'm Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer. I will be back next week with a new show. Thank you so much for listening, and take care.
The theme song for Animal Instinct is Never Coming Home by the Ranch Hands.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.